The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to another episode.
2 hours.
Another episode of We the People Radio.
A fun and frivolity.
Yeah, and information. So here at We the People, we like it when you call in, but we always forget to give you the number. So we're going to get that out of the way. It's 530-605-4567. And one really important point is the website, wethepeopleradio.us. And on there, you will find all sorts of archives stretching back into 2010. You'll also, if you go to the archive page, last night I spent a little bit of extra time, and I put up some future shows that we have booked. So thought I'd just give you a little heads up there. Next week, we have William Kay from Canada. He has eco-fascism is his website. So he believes that environmentalism is fascism. And he believes it so strongly that he was persecuted by listeners on his own radio program and got enough death threats, he took himself off the air.
That's always
so he
fun.
Comes on our show.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Isn't that great? We figure if they were in Canada trying to kill him, they're not going to come all the way down here. You know, it's too much work. And then March 1st, really important, there is a Technocracy Town Hall. So we've had Patrick Wood on a couple times. The Technocracy Rising book is the one that we covered. I hope you will read it. It's
because that show's going to be a blowout.
And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So we're going to do we're calling it a national town hall, which I know seems a little crazy because how do you do a national town hall on the radio? But we're doing it anyway. And you'll be able to connect in by phone, obviously, by chat, by email. So we'll have all those venues available. And we're asking that the people who pitch in on the discussion, that you obviously this is a self-regulated thing, but we want you to have read the book.
That's important.
You got to read the book. And actually, if you go to the webpage for that March 1st thing, you can RSVP for that. Mr. Wood has kind of taken...
Did you give him the name of the book?
He's kind of keeping track of that. Technocracy
Rising.
Rising.
Yes.
And the book is on there. You can buy the book on there. And the RSVP, and what was the other thing? There was something else. Anyway, you can send that out to your friends and stuff. But I think it's going to be a great discussion. He sent me yesterday, of course, I can't find it now that I want to just look it up. He sent me a list of all the towns that have RSVP'd. Holy cow. We've got people in Canada, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California.
New Jersey.
Yeah, Wyoming. Yeah, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Texas.
All over the place.
Yeah, they're all over.
So this is really starting to pick up steam. He had a whole bunch of people who picked up on that yesterday. And I do think, interestingly enough, that one of the things that's driving the tremendous amount of participation and also the traffic. The traffic on our website has just been gigantic. Let's see.
Can we assume that some of these people have actually listened to the show before?
Yeah, I'm assuming so. So there's a whole bunch of people out there listening. But the page, our website's up to 4,400 hits, and that's since December 1st. I put up a new site December 7th, actually, was our first show. So in like 2.5 months... somehow, 4,400 times, and it doesn't count the times I go to edit. I did check that. But I think a lot of it's due to Twitter. I guess that was my point in saying that, mm-hmm. was we didn't have that type of really big volume, but Twitter is doing a lot for that. So if you've kind of hung back on that, it is easy, it's fast.
And you gotta learn to tweet.
Yeah, and apparently people are interactive. I mean, they will click the link and look at what you're sending out, much more than Facebook. That seems to be very limited. We've always had a Facebook page, and we've never had that kind of traffic. So anyway, just a hot tip for you. How are we doing with our doctor? Do we have him trapped in there?
He's trapped in the phone system somewhere.
I did not know that.
Hello.
You're so fast, I didn't see you dial, Bob. Gotta watch. We have to watch him every minute. It's a lot of work. Hey, so we're talking about Well, I titled the show, it's kind of an awkward title, but I said, Doctor Stops Accepting Insurance, Turns Obamacare on Its Head. I sort of messed around a little bit with your Wall Street Journal article. So we have Dr. Gerard. I'm gonna go for
Giannoli.
Giannoli. I was going to say that, but I was scared.
I was like, it's got to be Giannoli. What else is there, right?
That's right. Thank you for having me on the show.
We just think your idea of taking yourself out of the insurance, my doctor does that, actually.
Congratulations.
They still do the billing, but I already know what I'm going to pay, and then they just float it over to the insurance and, you know, it sits there because I have a $9 million deductible.
I loved your article in the Wall Street Journal as well. That really spells it out. I think you're right. I think that's going to be the direction of
healthcare.
We're
going to have to.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
I think we were just a little bit ahead of our times when we started doing this. There seems to be sort of a tidal wave happening with regards to that.
And you're in Louisiana.
Yes, ma'am, in Covington, Louisiana, which is just north of New Orleans.
Okay, and you started doing this when? Before the healthcare thing or like kind of during that ugly?
Actually, before. We started moving toward this model, believe it or not, in 2001, and we finished in 2005 when we cut our last contract with an insurance company. And from 2005 to the present, we've had absolutely no insurance contracts with anybody. We don't have any contracts with Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross, you name it. We only work for our patients, not for anybody else. The way it works is patients will call our office, and on the phone, before they even schedule the appointment, they're told how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, nice.
So they can decide whether it's worth the value that they're going to spend before they even make the appointment. After they come in, they're expected to pay at the time of service. And, you know, we accept cash, credit cards. You know, I mean, we're not discriminatory with that regard. And then we give them a HICFA form, which they will then submit to their own insurance company. It's simply all they'd have to do is sign it, put it in an envelope, and seal it and mail it off. And the insurance company will reimburse the patient based on the patient's individual insurance.
So they submit that form and just give them a copy of your bill, or?
Well, it's a HICFA form. It's got all the fancy codes that we have to write.
Oh, okay.
Write
so you do the legwork. You do all the hard stuff. All they got to do is mail it.
Yeah. And it's really not the hard stuff. Is really not that hard because it's just a matter of punching the codes into the form, and it spits out at the end of the visit.
Hmm.
Well, that's...
And so then the patient, like I said, gets reimbursed whatever their insurance is. And really it depends on the individual patient's insurance. From the insurance company standpoint, we're considered out of network for anybody. Like, so let's say you have Blue Cross and you come to see us. Blue Cross just sees us as out of network. And as you know, when you look at your own insurance plan, you'll see, okay, if I'm in network, they're going to pay 90% of my doctor's bill. And if I go out of network, they only pay 70%. But one of the things they don't tell you is that they pay 70% of a much higher number.
Oh.
In other words, they're trying to make you think you're going to pay a whole lot more if you go out of network. And you may pay more, but they're going to pay a whole lot more because it's a 70% of a much higher number. Because the way they get doctors into their insurance panels is they say, okay, you sign up with us, we're going to send you a whole bunch of patients, but in return, you have to agree to these low fees. And that's how they get the doctors in. If you're not in their panel, I haven't agreed to any fee with Blue Cross. And so consequently, actually there's been some lawsuits over this where some of the insurance companies have not paid the out-of-network portions in a reasonable fashion. And there's been some multi-million dollar lawsuits regarding that to kind of like, you know, keep the insurance companies in line.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
So the insurance companies don't like this model?
Oh, gosh, no. No, they'd much rather have you stay in network where they have control over the doctors. You know, for example, you know, one of the really interesting things that people don't know about is the classic is Blue Cross will say, or whoever, I don't want to pick on Blue Cross per se, but they'll say, okay, we're going to pay for this patient's, you know, visit or their surgery or whatever, and then they send the payment to your doctor. let's say they sent him $1,000, okay? Then a few months later, the insurance company will send the doctor a letter saying, you know, gee, we thought about this, and, you know, we really overpaid you for that. We're going to take back $400 of that.
Oh, my gosh, they can do that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's in their contract. Now, me, on the other hand, since I don't accept any money from the insurance company, they will occasionally send that letter to me, and we will send them back a letter saying, gee, you know, you never sent us any money at all, so you don't get any money back at all. And surprise, surprise, they never asked that money back from the patient.
Now, is the dollar amount that you charge, I walk in, you charge me, let's say, $100. The HIPAA form that you give me, is it claiming the $100 or is it claiming the rate that they'll pay?
Okay, it's a HICFA form, HICFA, which is actually an old, outdated thing. It's separate from
HIPAA. HIPAA is the privacy thing.
But what we have on the form is how much you paid exactly to the penny what you paid, and it also has it broken down according to what we call CPT codes, current procedural technology code, I believe is what it's called.
Who set those dollar amounts on those codes?
It's actually set by the AMA. They have a monopoly on this, and the reimbursement for all of the insurance companies is based on these codes and the diagnosis. And so we'll just split it up for the patient. Okay, we spent this much on the patient spent this much on this particular code, this much on that code, and send it off to an insurance company. And the interesting thing is sometimes they'll just completely say, oh, we don't pay for this particular code, period. Hmm. You know, and it's just some of the vagaries of the insurance industry. One of the frustrations we had before we got out of the insurance company was all this just arbitrariness of how they pay.
Yeah.
What I deal with is vertigo and dizziness patients, and there's one particular test that's, you know, I mean, it's just a standard thing we've been doing for, gosh, probably 30 years. About 10 years ago, they just decided, you know, we think that's experimental. We're not going to pay for that anymore. And they just stopped paying for it.
You know, so every patient that would come in,
we would do that test, we would get zero for it.
Yeah.
Well, they do that with medication all the time.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
You know, they'll say that oh, that's not used for that, so you can't get it for that. Really? Yeah.
It was kind of an odd
coincidence that the week that we were setting this interview up was the week that I had vertigo, by the way.
You need to come down. Let us evaluate you.
No kidding. I just want to point that out, that I was wishing you were closer.
Actually, the reason I can stay in business is because I do vertigo. I mean, my specialty is neuro-otology and skull-based surgery. And among the things that we specialize, one is vertigo. And right now, if you go see your doctor for vertigo, first of all, to really be able to diagnose someone with vertigo, you have to spend a lot of time with them with a very long history physical. You have to do very extensive testing, and you have to spend a lot of time counseling as to what's going on and what to do about it. First of all, that hour and a half you'll need to spend doing history and physical, the doctor is only going to get paid about as much as he would as if he spent 2 minutes cleaning wax out of someone's ear.
Oh, great.
Okay, so right off the bat, they have no big incentive to see somebody with vertigo and dizziness, or at least not to treat
them
correctly.
That's why there's no one here that I've found that actually does that.
This is why.
Yeah.
The second thing is the testing. They will reimburse for the testing less than what it costs to do the testing appropriately. So they're going to lose money on that. And third, they're not going to pay at all for all the time you're going to spend counseling the patient. So consequently, what my colleagues in neurotology, there's only about 200 board-certified neurotologists in the country, and among those, a lot of them, they just won't see dizzy patients at all. They just tell the patient, their receptionist up front, if someone calls up with vertigo dizziness problems, tell them I don't do that. And that's one of the ways they've dealt with it. Another way they'll do it is they'll say, okay, I'll see them, but I'll only see like one a week, in which case then you got a six-month waiting list.
Sure.
And then the third thing they do is, this is the more recent trend, is they've hired a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant, and they just shunt them all to that particular person and tell them, look, if you find anything that really needs my attention, let me know.
Don't forget, so, there's always option four, where you put the little circle thing behind your ear that's supposed to do like the seasickness thing or whatever that is. And it has a little warning on the label that says it might cause you to be sleepy. I swear to God, that thing touched my ear and I was rendered unconscious for 8 hours. It was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Those will definitely make you sleepy. Absolutely.
Sleepy, yeah.
But consequently, what happens is most patients with vertigo and dizziness do not get adequately treated. And if they want to get adequately treated, they come see me where I charge them a reasonable price and I actually spend all the time they need. And that's how I've been able to stay in practice. Because otherwise, why go see me when you have to pay up front? Why not go see your $5 copay doctor?
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they're trying to do, is get everybody to do that. And if you need anything more complicated, you should just go to the emergency room, because the insurance actually incentivizes you to go to the ER rather than your doctor anyway. So, yeah, it's a terrific system. We're definitely headed the right direction.
Well, in fairness, before, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, before Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, things were not great. You know, we had problems with, you know, outrageous and ridiculous bills, you know, people not be able to get coverage when they had pre-existing conditions, all kinds of bureaucratic nonsense, escalating costs. But in what's happened since the Affordable Care Act, it's actually made all those problems worse. About the only one that's not made worse is the fact that you can't disallow somebody with a pre-existing condition. But almost everything else, the Affordable Care Act has actually kind of doubled down on the horrible system we had before.
Yeah, and didn't fix the lawsuits or any of that. We've got to take a quick break here. We're going to come right back.
Sure.
We're talking to Dr. Gianulli here this first hour regarding concierge-type medicine here as an alternative, which sounds like a good one. Second hour will be with Art Thompson from the John Birch Society. We're talking about the Article 5 Convention and how they don't support that. So for all of you that think that's a great idea, we're going to find out why it's not a great idea, second hour.
And if you want an appointment with the doctor, he's in Louisiana.
He's in Louisiana, so you can book your plane ticket today.
Get right on that.
You can go with me. We'll carpool. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Alrighty, you're rejoining We the People Radio. We are here with Dr. Gerald Gianulli.
Did you miss the first line of that?
From Louisiana.
I
didn't know really
thing.
What that was about. Oh. I was just glossing over it.
Oh.
What did it mean? I know there is meaning.
It said, hello, you're in a place called Vertigo.
Oh! I had no idea there was a Vertigo song. Why didn't I think of that, Bob? Of course you know a Vertigo song. You know songs for everything. Okay, you get bonus points for that, actually. That was a three-pointer.
I have to go back to start.
Yeah, you lose. Okay, so doctor, this is the thing. We tried to do the math on the break, you know, how it was better for you versus what they were paying before. Yeah, we don't get it.
Yeah, how is it cheaper? If you, in your article, you were saying that you can charge three, sometimes four times less than what it would cost if we went through an insurance company. But if I pay you, say $40 for a visit, what would the cost be if I went through a different doctor that went through insurance? I mean, how does that savings calculate to me?
Let me give you a real simple common example.
That's what I know.
There we go. There
okay, mammograms. Okay, something that most women get every year or every couple years or so.
Bill gets one every year.
My wife recently had. I ordered the mammogram for her. You know, being the inner ear doctor that orders mammograms all the time. Just
yeah.
Kidding.
Yeah, right.
So I ordered a mammogram for her, and she went to get the mammogram done. And we have a big high deductible plan, $10,000 deductible, so we're going to have to pay everything, right? She asked the lady up front, well, let me just go ahead and pay now. And she said, oh, no, let's just run it through the insurance and let us bill you, you know. All right, she says. Okay, so a couple months later, we get the bill. The charge for the mammogram was $350, which is, from my experience, and this is something I investigated a few years back, that's a pretty average charge for screening mammograms in my area. With the insurance we have and the insurance discount, it was $250, which is maybe a little on the high end for what I've seen with others. I think Medicare will pay $130, and the insurers will pay anywhere from $130 to $250, somewhere up in there. However, if you would have paid cash in advance, particularly during Breast Cancer Awareness Week, it would have been $40 to $50.
But does the insurance pay the $250, or are they kicking that back?
No, I do. That's with the insurance discounts. It's brought it down to $250. So we would have been, it would have been cheaper for us to not use our insurance and just pay cash. And I know everybody's going to say, well, that's just weird and bizarre. Well, but think of it like this. The radiology unit is sitting there thinking, okay, we can get $40 or $50 from this person now, cash in hand, no question about it. Or we can get a promise that they might send us a check for $250 later on.
Right.
And if they don't send the $250, then we have to expend resources of our $20 an hour personnel to track down that from the insurance company or from the patient, and eventually have to turn it up to a collection service. And, you know, when you're paying an employee $20 an hour, how long before they eat up most of your profit?
Yeah, you're going to get $40 anyway.
Yeah. So from the radiology unit, if they're guaranteed they're going to get paid $50, they're going to take it every single time. And it's kind of the same thing with my office. I don't have to charge outrageous amounts for you to subsidize the other guy that's not going to pay me. I just charge a reasonable amount for the service because I'm going to get paid. I know I'm going to get paid. We have zero accounts receivable for my office.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, my fees are roughly about a fourth of what my colleagues are.
And you and the patient can still go back and claim that $50 on the
absolutely.
Insurance. Right.
Absolutely. And again, it really depends on their individual insurance. I've had patients who actually had one who told me, gee, doc, your bill is cheap. They told me they had approved it for like three times as much. And that's the thing. The reason why the doctor's cash prices are so high is because there is the occasional insurance company that will pay them these really high amounts. And that's another thing people think about. Well, gosh, you know, aren't the insurance companies out there trying to bargain for the best price?
Mm-mm.
And not really. The insurance company really doesn't care how much they pay for any one service. All they care about is sounding like they care. Because what they do is, let's say they bargain the price down to $100. Well, what they do is then they just tack on, you know, 10, 20 bucks for their profit and pass it on to you. You're the one that's paying for it with your premiums. You know, so whether it's $100 or $300, as long as they're getting their 20 bucks, they don't care.
Right.
Sure. Now, there, you mentioned three different ways this could be done. The regular way where you go in and, you know, it all goes through the insurance. I think everybody's pretty conversant with that. Then there is this called concierge, or
no,
is it the membership part that's called concierge?
Actually, yeah, let me clear that up for you. There's two types of practices that I kind of wrote about in the Wall Street Journal article. There's the first one that everybody hears a lot about, and there's a television show about it called concierge medicine. Concierge medicine is mainly primary care doctors, internal medicine, family practice, pediatrics. And what it is, you pay a subscription fee, whether it's $100 a month or whatever. And for that fee, you get 24/7 access to the doctor. You often will get their cell phone number. You get a promise to have an extended long visit, however long you need. And the doctor also typically promises to have a reduced number of patients, so he has time for you. You know, whereas the typical internal medicine doctor may have, you know, 5,000 patients in his practice, the concierge doctor will probably have somewhere between 300 and 500 patients.
Mm.
Now, and each one of those concierge practices works a little bit differently. There's a little different little twist on the theme. That's not what I have. I have what we call a third-party free practice. For a third-party free practice, it's basically I have no contracts with any insurance company. The patients pay me. I give them their receipt or HCFA form, and then they deal with their own insurance company. And it's just it's basically how medicine was before the early 90s. There's a number of doctors out there doing this. Back when we started doing it, less than 1% of doctors were doing third-party free medicine or cash-based practices of some sort. Now we're at 7.5%. There's another 12.5% that are probably going to do so in the next couple of years, according to a Physicians Foundation poll of 20,000 doctors. Another interesting phenomenon that's happening while this is happening is kind of going in the opposite direction. 2008, the Physicians Foundation poll found that there were over two-thirds of doctors were private practice owners. Fast forward 6 years to 2014, now it's only about one-third of doctors are private practice owners.
Oh, wow.
And that's a huge shift in not just the loss of a lot of private, you know, basically small businesses, which
sure.
is certainly going to hurt from the economic standpoint, but it also changes drastically how doctors will practice medicine. Most of these people have not gone and become third-party free practices like myself. They've become employees to large hospital corporations.
Right.
Consequently, they have another layer of bureaucracy on top of their shoulders. And my colleagues that have gone from private practice to becoming employees of hospital systems, I really feel sorry for you, for them. And they are a very, very unhappy group. What's happened is you've taken a bad situation and you've made it worse. You've gone from being in the frying pan into the fire. When you were dealing with all these third-party payment systems, you had this conflict of interest. You're being asked for services by the patient, but you're being paid by the insurance company. So you got to wonder, which boss are you going to listen to, the one that's demanding services or the one that's paying you? And there's going to be a big natural tendency to do what the one that's paying you wants you to do. Consequently, once they become an employee, that gets magnified. And their boss, the hospital corporation, is going to be saying, and literally I know of doctors that have told me this, there are managers in the office with them with a stopwatch saying, gee, you know, you spent 10 minutes with that patient. You really were only supposed to spend 8 minutes with them.
Ugh.
And so on top of that other conflict of interest, now you've got a boss hammering you and telling you, okay, we're going to have to cut your salary for next year.
Wow.
Or fire you.
See, and that's your managed care. We do quite a bit on VA. We just had a doc on from our VA system, and that's the same thing. It's the HMOs and all that, the managed care where you have 12 and a half minutes, hurry, go, you know, and that's probably actually a generous time limit.
Well, the ACOs is the next big thing that's coming that a lot of people don't quite understand what's going to happen with that, but basically the accountable care organizations are just a big form of what we call capitation.
Ooh.
And these systems are going to be paid not to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
That's a huge conflict of interest. The less people you take care of, the more money you're going to make.
Wow.
And it's not in the hands of the doctors. It's in the hands of bureaucrats and business executives at the big hospital corporations.
Sure. And so this hasn't it hasn't really increased care. It's actually just kind of narrowed. I'm picturing cattle, you know, in the chute there. It just kind of made it narrower. You guys have gotten out of the mix of that, but how long do you think it'll be before they outlaw what you're doing?
I think it's going to be quite a while because of the huge move of doctors from private practice into these hospital employment situations.
Mm, okay.
once they become employees, they have no control over the practice. They have to do whatever their boss tells them. They have to accept whatever insurance company contract their boss tells them to accept. And as long as there's a large portion there, I don't think they're going to come after doctors like me. Although there was a movement to nationalize licensure. And if they ever do that, right now a licensure is a state thing. But if they ever get national licensure, the next step's going to be, well, in order for you to maintain your license, Dr. Gignoli, you're going to have to be part of, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, sure, et cetera. And in which case, that's when I either retire or I move my practice to the Bahamas.
Yeah, because at that point, you're totally under their control.
You can't go to Canada because it's already against the law in Canada. Oh. That's why they're coming here.
I could tell you stories about some of my Canadian patients.
Oh, good. Well, let's do that when we come back.
Okay.
Got to take a really swift break and thank our advertisers because you know what? They're great, and they make the shows possible. So you're listening to We the People Radio. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Phone number here is 530-605-4567 at KCNR 1460 AM.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears till I cry. Now I want to understand. I have done all.
There you go, Dr. Gignoli. There's your theme song to Royal Pains.
Beautiful.
I told you Bob always has something up his sleeve. Hey, we've got Billy Bob on the line. He's got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Fire away.
Billy Bob, you in there?
Hello?
Oh, am I on?
You're on, buddy.
Hey, well, thanks for taking my call. Bill and Aaron, great to have you back on the air. The odd hour in the afternoon makes it hard for me to listen, but I just caught this doctor talking about all the problems he's got. But I had this question, other than the fact that the last 45 minutes of this radio program has got me dizzy and I've got vertigo. And I've never had this problem before.
We need to
so
put a
anyway,
disclaimer
other than
on there.
That, can I ask the doctor one question? What is, and since he's an expert, and I can't imagine anybody, specializing in vertigo. I've never even had a friend that's had vertigo before. But anyway, what is the most common cause? You know, a ninth floor suicide jump or what? what causes this vertigo and what is your prescription? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Billy
Thank
Bob.
Thank you. The question, Billy Bob. The most common cause of vertigo is something called benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. It is the most common cause. It is so common that I would dare say probably almost everybody will get it at some point in their life, and most of the time it won't require you to go see a doctor about it because it will go away on its own. But it's because there are two types of sensors in the inner ear. The semicircular canals that give you angular acceleration information and the otolithic organs, which give you gravity and linear acceleration. The otolithic organs have crystals on them, and when they break loose and wind up floating into the semicircular canal, you suddenly start getting gravity information on an angular accelerometer and screws up your input and gives you these brief bouts of vertigo.
Totally
so take that.
Sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, well,
head trauma is probably the most common reason for it. Also, older age. As we get older, it gets more and more. It gets extremely common past the age of 70.
What about viruses?
Viruses do account for some. Probably it's one of these ones where it's overestimated because so many people get labeled as a virus because the doctor has no idea what else to tell them.
But see, the thing that's funny is I went in to be tested because I had what looked like a kidney infection or something like that. But the morning I was going to go to the doctor's office, I rolled over in bed at like 3:30 and then pretty much couldn't stop throwing up. It was awesome. And then the kidney thing went away, which was great.
Well, you know, the story of rolling over in bed and the having the onset of vertigo is the classic description for the benign positional vertigo.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, it didn't go away for quite a while, though. It was a few days.
I know a lady that got vertigo. This was years ago. And she bent over in a store one day and stood up. And that was it. She was in bed for like 6 months. She could not get out of bed.
And the sad thing about it is that's actually a fairly easy thing to fix. If it's appropriately diagnosed, there's a 5-10 minute office procedure you can do to make it go away.
Yeah, I've heard like a rotating of the head type of thing.
Right. It's the gentleman John Epley from Portland, Oregon.
Well, the Epley procedure. I've heard of
that. Yeah, he devised the most commonly used procedure.
Mexican.
And we actually have something called the Epley Omniax chair, which you strap the patient in. You can turn him in any direction you want, which Dr. Epley developed years later.
50 shades of gray.
To fix it. But it's actually a fairly easy thing to fix.
I have to go clobber Bill. Just go ahead. You kids talk amongst yourselves.
Sure, I thought we were going to get through the weekend without mentioning that movie.
No, we weren't.
I'm sorry.
Jeez Louise. We were talking on the, always on the break, all of a sudden we have all these questions. So we were mulling it over. If you have this, if you decide to pay cash, okay, if you're just regular patient person,
third
right,
party
with no,
versus, yeah.
with no medical skills, so you're going to need medical people to help you. So let's just say you decide to pay cash for everything and you don't carry insurance. Well, I guess it's against the law now, depending on how you view that.
There's a legal way of doing that if you want to know.
Yeah, what do they do with, let's just even say that
technically
they're...
I don't have insurance.
Okay. Do we still have catastrophic plans for, what if
you
get cancer or fall off a building or something?
The Obamacare has made catastrophic plans illegal with one exception. There's these things called faith health ministries. And there's four of them that I know of where it's basically, it's exempt from Obamacare. And it's Christian organizations where people are basically just sharing medical expenses, but it functions like a catastrophic insurance policy. And the prices for it or the premiums for it are significantly lower than what you would get with one of the insurance companies. To give you an example, a neighbor around the block from me who has husband, wife, and four children, for a similar policy to what I've got, high deductible, with, and I'm not sure which insurance, it's one of the major insurance companies they have, they're going to be paying $1,700 a month.
Oh.
And they have I think it's a $10,000 deductible. So you're talking about, putting out a lot of money before the insurance company puts out a single dime on
you.
My policy with, it's Christian MediShare is the one I have. It's a similar policy, but it's basically just a true major medical policy. I pay $280 a month.
Ah. And how do people find out about that?
They don't carry or they don't cover like just simple go to the doctor for a runny nose, stuff like that. I mean,
they do, but they don't cover things that are known expected expenses. For example, the screening mammogram you're supposed to get every other year, whatever it is, that's a known expected expense, so they don't cover that. But as I mentioned earlier, they do have discounts put in so you don't get gouged the $350. You only have to pay the $250. But, again, if you're smarter than that, you can even go ahead of time, not even use your insurance and pay less.
Right.
They don't cover things that are not of the Christian beliefs. In other words, it won't cover abortion services or birth control services. But in truthfulness, those are elective things that people can decide whether they want to pay for or not. And I give the analogy of having insurance for your car. You can get a policy where it covers you if you have a major accident that costs tens of thousands of dollars to fix, Or you can have a policy that covers your oil change and to pay for your gas and to pay for you to change your tires. And of course it's going to cost more than what it costs to get your oil change and get your gas and change your tires, because you got to pay this third person in there to accommodate things.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Now, how do people find out about those plans?
Well, Christian MediShare is on the internet, and you can just, I think you just put in MediShare.com or something like that. There's another one called Samaritan, and there's two others that I don't know the names of. But they're all exempt from the Affordable Care Act, and significantly lower prices and gets rid of all the craziness with it, all the stupid mandates. The other thing I should mention is a website called MediBid. Okay. MediBid, MediBid.com. MediBid is sort of like an auction site for medical services. Let's say you want to get a CT scan of your head or a CT scan of your knee, and you want to find out what's the best cash price. You log into the site, you put in there, and they bid for your services. Mm. And you get the lowest cash price available in your area. And then the other resource your listeners probably need to know about is the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. That's AAPSonline.org. And they keep a database of all the doctors in the country that have some sort of cash-based practice.
Oh, wow.
And there are doctors all over the country doing this, in particular with regards to primary care. And they have various types of formats. Some will do the concierge practice. Some will have just inexpensive office visits where it's $40 a visit. There's an orthopedic surgeon I met last week who has dumped his old practice, and now he has two fees. One is for new patients and one is for existing patients. The new patient fee is $300. And for that $300, you get history, physical, any x-ray you need, and you get casting or splinting. Hmm. And
wow.
That's probably 90% of all orthopedics right there. And then return visits, I think you said, was $80.
Yeah, you would really have to do your homework on this, because I can see if the difference between a third-party program versus concierge. If you're 20-something, you might be better off with third-party because you're not going to go to the doctor. But then... If you were like a single parent with two or three kids where you got to take a kid to a doctor every other week, concierge might be better for you.
I can tell you probably the easiest way to fix this for everybody is if it was made illegal for insurance companies to have contracts with doctors and hospitals, because that's what screwed things up, as well as Medicare, because they've gone through screwing up the free market process. We've not had a true free market in medicine since the early 60s with the introduction of Medicare, and that's what made the prices start spiraling out of control. And if you eliminate that, then you'll have true free market competition. And the way I can prove that to you is look at the aspects of medicine where those things have not been in play. LASIK surgery for your eyes, any kind of refractive eye surgery, cosmetic surgery, the prices are actually lower now than they were 10 years ago, and the services are better.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I forgot about that. That has gone down.
Because that's definitely a free market type thing. I mean, everybody is going to be out there bidding for your business.
And it's because there is no insurance involved. Medicare is not involved.
Right.
Once you put those in there, the prices go up.
Right. Hmm.
Good point.
I could tell you two Canadian stories if you're interested.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We forgot about that.
I have one patient from Canada who took a picture of a sign outside of her primary care doctor's office in Canada, and she emailed it to me. And the crux of the sign was this. It said, all visits are restricted to 10 minutes and two questions.
Oh,
wow.
And that's because if he doesn't restrict things, he can't get through his day because he's got so much demand on his time. The other is a patient that came to see me, and what happened was she would send me all of her information before she came to visit. And I sent her an email back saying, okay, well, the one thing we don't have that we need before you come visit is an MRI scan. I can get one here for you. I can work out a cash price of $500 for you, and we can get it done when you're here, or you can get it done up in Canada. And she said, well, I can get it for free here in Canada. Let me just do that. Okay, this was in January. She comes down. We get her evaluation, and I'm like, well, you know, we really need that MRI scan. We don't have it. And she said, oh, it's scheduled. I said, when's it scheduled for? It's scheduled for in October.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, she finally gets it done in October, and she sends it to me saying the radiologist read it out as normal. And I look at it, and it's not normal. They missed a large Chiari malformation, and I sent her back saying it's wrong. And so she brings it back to her primary care doctor, who says, well, I can't do anything about this. The radiologist report says it's normal. Well, have the radiologist look at it again. He won't look at it again. He then had to send it to a neurologist another 6 months before she can get to the neurologist. Neurologist looks at it and said, oh, of course, you've got a Chiari malformation here. Let's send you to a neurosurgeon. Another 6 months before you go see the neurosurgeon. So basically, just with that little shenanigans, you're talking about a year and a half or more delay in care, and this lady was suffering the whole time.
Nice. And that makes for excellent medical care, you know, when the people are actually suffering while they're waiting. That's terrific.
Yep.
That's when we know we've arrived. Good grief. Well, you know, we really turns out we had a lot more questions than we had answers.
Yeah. We could have done 2 hours with you.
we're gonna have to force you to come back and talk to us some more.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And I've listed the links for the Christian MediShare, the MediBid, and the AAPS online. So for those people that might be driving or something thinking, oh, great, how am I going to remember that? On the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you, Dr. Giannoli. We appreciate you and wish you were closer.
My pleasure being here.
Thanks a lot. We'll be right back with Art Thompson from the John Birch Society. We'll be talking about the Article 5 Constitutional Convention and why that's a bad idea. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding. Well, good afternoon. You are rejoining We the People Radio for the second hour. You can reach us by phone at 530-605-4567. And online, we've logged into the chat room, so there is a point of going to the website. It's wethepeopleradio.us. And there are some folks in the chat room now. We kind of forgot about it last hour. We were busy talking medical talk, and that's always confusing.
I got all wrapped up.
I know. Got all focused. And don't make me hurt you. It's going to cost extra.
Sorry.
We don't have concierge medicine.
I won't mention that movie.
On the page, I linked all the stuff for the doctor, too, and the archive will be up by about 2:30 of both shows. So if you guys missed part of it, you should go back. It was very interesting. I have one announcement. I don't know if I have all the facts straight because I wasn't able to listen to the voicemail, but Tracy Mann, who has been on here with us several times, she's just been doing a ton of research on Common Core. She will be speaking at the Reading Tea Party tomorrow night, Monday night, the 16th at 6 p.m. And my voicemail translates into text, and what it says is there's childcare if people bring their kids. So they're looking for parents to come and learn. And if you can't go because you have kids, I guess you can take them. And they've got it figured out. Somebody will watch them. So there you go. That's all my hot information for the afternoon. I've now expended everything. And we've got Art Thompson. So now let's get to business. We've got Art Thompson on here again from the John Birch Society, and we had such a great time with him last time. But we didn't get to the Constitutional Convention, and there's a lot of talk about that these days. So we thought we better get the real lowdown on what's going on with this thing, and Art was just the guy to do it. How you doing, Art?
I'm doing very well. Thanks.
Are you on the since the country is virtually sawed in half and the right side is freezing cold and the left side thinks it's summer, are you in summer or are you in winter?
Well, I'm looking for Obama's global warming right now. We can't have it. We don't have any here.
You're in the not global warming area.
Yes, very much
yeah,
so.
We have a heavy dose of global warming today.
We're having all the global warming. Well, my daughter lives in Maine. She sent me a text last week. They had 87 inches of snow, so.
Yeah, they have no global warming.
They have no global warming in Maine.
In fact, the president of the John Birch Society has 7 feet in his front yard.
Oh,
and he just lives outside of Boston.
Oh, my gosh.
The same with us. We don't have much here. We maybe have 6-8 inches, perhaps, but high today of 8. I woke up at minus 8, so it gives you an idea.
Yeah, we left our coats at home because it was 70 when we left.
73.
Oh, I feel 73. So sorry for you.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. I miss winter. I know. It's a good thing you're not here.
We don't get winters anymore. I don't understand that.
I miss winter. Our trees miss winter, too. They're all blooming, so there's probably some frost coming that's going to screw them up. So, anyway.
More likely.
So the Constitutional Convention, at the end of the day, is a bad thing.
Yes, we think so very much, and for a number of different reasons. First of all, we ask the primary question, if Congress, the President, or the Supreme Court follows the Constitution today. I've never had anybody say yes. Well, if they don't follow it today, what makes us think they're going to follow something that would be amended for the better? And, you know, the three branches follow the Constitution, would not follow the Constitution any more faithfully than they do now. The problem isn't really the Constitution. It's that they don't follow it. And there are a number of proposals, by the way, in relationship to this Constitutional Convention that disturb us a lot. It's being sold amongst the conservatives with a number of various issues, such as a balanced budget, abortion, that sort of thing, and they've gotten a lot of Republicans on board. But what they don't realize is there are a lot of Democrats, liberals, and socialists on board this thing as well. That is sort of behind the scenes. We know that there are individuals who want to completely rewrite the Constitution. We know that there is a heavy move to change the Second Amendment to the Constitution through this process. Some of the leaders of this process actually are very much involved in trying to eliminate the Second Amendment as we understand it today. In other words, the right to keep and bear arms. They want to change it to the right to keep and bear arms within a militia. Well, since no militia really exists, no one will have that right.
Yeah, no kidding. This is,
pardon?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's a disaster.
It is. And what a lot of people don't realize as well is that the umbrella group, Call a Convention, is actually run by an anti-Christian individual, Lawrence Lessig. Now, he may say he's not anti-Christian, but I don't know of many Christians who show videos of Jesus Christ lip-singing, I shall survive, then taking all of his clothes off down to a diaper, running down the street, getting run over by a city bus. He stopped using that video anymore because it caused such a negative reaction to some of the audience.
What a surprise.
As you can well imagine.
Yeah, no kidding. And he's the guy kind of behind this?
Well,
he's
one of the guys. In fact, he attended, for those of your listeners who understand the Bilderbergers.
Yep.
Last year, he attended the Bilderberger meeting, and he is the man who is running the umbrella group called Call a Convention that includes these liberals, socialists, and conservatives who all agree that they need a constitutional convention. Now, they may not call it that, although the original conference at Harvard University last year, or maybe it was the year before last, excuse me, called it a constitutional convention. Now suddenly they're calling it a conference of the states. COS is the term they use. But they all agreed that they wanted to use Article 5 for a constitutional convention. They all agreed that they were going to move this agenda forward, even though they disagreed, at least publicly, on the agenda. So we see, for instance, in Oklahoma, they have not been doing very well there in getting this passed, so now they've included the idea of a pro-life amendment as part of the process. And we've told people all along that, look, they're telling you that all they want is a balanced budget amendment. Now they're throwing in pro-life, and on and on and on and on. You cannot limit what is done at these conventions. In fact, there are 4 states, and if I remember correctly off the top of my head, they include Arkansas, South Carolina, Indiana and Hawaii have put in a blanket a call for a constitutional convention with no instructions whatsoever. Just go have a convention and discuss the Constitution.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing that we see growing. They've thrown millions of dollars into it, from which we cannot find the source. We have no idea where this money is coming from. Last year they bragged they were going to spend $29 million on it. I know that they've been having charter jets and a lot of other people getting frequent flyer miles going around all over the country, sitting down and talking to legislators. Well, they have to do it that way because they don't live there. They're from outside the state coming in and convincing these people, whereas members of the John Birch Society are getting in front of their representatives in those legislatures to convince them that this is not a real good deal. It's too open-ended. It's fraught with danger. Even Madison said, I fear for the day when we have another constitutional convention. Another thing is that if you don't, just ask yourself the question, if you're for it, let's say, you know, it sounds like a great idea. We have to do something is the mantra.
Yeah.
And so who is going to be or how many people are going to be representatives from your state to this convention? How are they going to be elected or appointed or whatever? We simply don't know at this juncture. If you don't know who are the individuals that are going to represent you at a constitutional convention, I'd be a little worried because they don't have the name of Washington and Madison and Hamilton and Jay and those kinds of people. Instead, we have individuals that even the best of Republicans that are familiar names in various households around the country are not exactly constitutionalists as we think of original intent. Oh, they may talk about the Constitution and everything else, but when you look at their voting record, only a few, a handful, rise to the level of voting a constitutional agenda 100%. Very, very few of them even rise above 60% on the Republican side of the ledger. So if you don't even know how your delegates are going to be named, who they will be, I'd be a little concerned about that. So there are other aspects of it too, but those are the essential things that bother us.
Yeah, no kidding. So when we come back, we need to delve into why it is that you have guys like Mark Levin and all those folks that are kind of, you know, they appear to be flame-throwing right-wingers.
Well, they're beating the drum for this whole thing.
But they are beating the drum for this. So let's do that when we come back. Take a really quick break and thank our advertisers. You are listening to We the People Radio. Catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Art Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. We'll be right back with you here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
The mission.
This New Year's Eve was the final barrier.
The
mission. We took you up and we put you in the backseat. Submission. From year to year, we looked up for the venture.
Dominance.
Submission.
That makes the Constitutional Convention sound scarier, actually. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with the CEO of the John Birch Society, Art Thompson. He's actually Arthur R. Thompson, but we get to call him Art, which is pretty darn fun.
Prefer it anyway.
Yeah. So tell us why are guys that are, you know, should be on the right side of all this, why are they pushing it?
Well, I think the answer, and I know this is going to sound strange when you're talking about individuals such as Mark Levin, but it's primarily a blind spot, if you will. They don't take a lot of things into consideration when they make their decisions. We in the John Birch Society take a look at a broad spectrum when we make up our decisions on something. And so when you go, for instance, and I hope your listeners have got a pad and pencil, or if they still exist, a pad and pen, so that they can jot these things down and look them up for themselves online. And if you go to, again, callaconvention.org, and it's very difficult to get into it, but once you get to there, they will tell you who are involved with them as their allies, if you will, their advisors, and so on and so forth. Originally, it said that this was a coalition of these individuals on their website. Once we exposed who all those individuals were and started to circulate that information, suddenly it went from being a coalition to simply people who agree with each other. And on this list are some very interesting people, because you should look up a guy by the name of Sanford, S-A-N-F-O-R-D, Levinson, L-E-V-I-N-S-O-N. And he's a constitutional law professor. Spent a little time online looking at what he has advocated in the way of changing the Constitution. He wants to rewrite the entire Constitution, period. Wolfpack, W-O-L-F, the animal, P, capital P-A-C, Wolfpack. The man that really started that got his start with Soros money.
Yeah.
So you have those sorts of people in this list, along with the Goldwater Institute, Mark Levin, and others. And they all agree they want to use Article 5, but I wonder sometimes if these people think that they're going to be able to control this. By that, I mean the people that follow the Goldwater Institute and Levin, not understanding what can happen with a lot of money and a lot of media, and the media is not exactly conservative, getting behind this thing once it's started to snowball, and they can take it over and misuse it. There are no rules. If you take a look at the original Constitutional Convention, if you remember your history, that was called to change or amend, rather, the Articles of a Confederation. It was not called to completely give us a different document nor change our system of government. But they sat down and decided it's just easier to start over, and so they did that. Wonderful men that were there, they gave us a great document, and so on and so forth. But one of the things that they wanted to change of the original articles was term limits, for instance. And yet today, one of the things they want to do with this Article 5 today is to reestablish it. They found out that term limits don't work. Let me give you one example. Has term limits for the President of the United States given us better presidents? No.
Yeah, no.
And so the thing is that people don't understand the nature of term limits as to how it can be used, because once you have term limits, you have a perpetual lame duck Congress. Nobody thinks about that part of it, to where that lame duck Congress can do just about anything they want simply because they will never, ever again stand for election, you see.
Sure.
And that was one of the problems under the Articles of Confederation. Bribery was a big problem. So at any rate, that's neither here nor there. But we believe that some of these people in good faith think that they're going to run this convention. But you've got states like New York and California, forgive me, but you have a real problem there.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about term limits that have failed, huh?
Yeah, and so there are states like that that are very liberal. They're not going to be standing aside in this convention process. They want to control it. How do we know what the actual ratification process is going to be? Mark Levin, for instance, in his book, advocates that we lower the requirements for ratification for a constitutional amendment. originally under the Articles of Confederation, it was unanimous. In other words, all the states of the United States had to vote unanimously to make any amendments to the Articles of Confederation. The convention said, no, we'll lower that to 3/4. Now, Levin in his book says, let's lower it to 2/3. Well, 2/3, I'm sorry, you can get an unbalanced budget passed through Congress anytime you want with 2/3, because that has been the historical amount of vote enabling them to pass unbalanced budgets. They always get over 60% voting for it. So that gives you an idea of, well, it on the surface may appear to be, you know, a good thing, but it's lowering again the standard of what we want to ratify amendments. Now, let me go back to the Second Amendment. I can prove to anybody in a, you know, if I'm in front of them, because I have to have the proof in hand to show them, that since the 1970s, in the public schools, people have been convinced that, yes, the citizen has the right to keep and bear arms, but Congress has the right to regulate them. Now, I've got that right out of school texts. And also, in the Common Core curricula, this is also something that they're trying to convince people of, that the Second Amendment is, oh, yeah, you can own a gun, but Congress has the right to regulate it, and any number of things. Now, if you figure it out, from 1970s on, the American public school system has been training people to believe that it's okay for Congress to regulate firearms. Now, what happens if they change that little subtle thing in there from the right to keep and bear arms to right to keep and bear arms in a militia? The people would fall for it, and that's dangerous. So that's the kind of thing that we're saying. Even in the ratification process, it depends on the education of the American people to understand the original intent and the reasons behind these things and the principles on which the Constitution was based. We don't have that today. And that is really the crux of the problem, is that the American people, if they don't force their congressmen to adhere to the Constitution now, no new constitution is going to work either.
Yeah,
and so the problem
really
is, yeah, and the problem is, so therefore the problem is more long range. The Tea Parties, the John Birch Society, Eagle Forum, which by the way is also against the Con-Con, we all have to work together to educate as many people in an outreach program on the Constitution. Now, one of our people say, oh, that's impossible. And yet, one of our adjuncts, one of our affiliates is Freedom Project Education. We have gotten, which is a school online, virtual classroom. In other words, it's homeschooling, but you're actually in class on your computer by Skype. And one of the things that we've done is put out constitutional videos. Do you know that we've had over 8 million people see those videos in the last 2 years? Yeah, it's a big task, but it is not an impossible task. And more people are waking up to the fact that they have to understand the Constitution. And there are so many things. I get up to the Hill, once a quarter, and I sit down with some of these congressmen. Some of them are just superior. I mean, there are men in Congress and women in Congress that are really good. You've never heard of them. They're never allowed to be chairman of committees. I know of one man who's been a congressman for 28 years. He's never been allowed to be a chairman of a committee because he's a strict constitutionalist. The Republican leadership will not allow him to do it any more than they did with Ron Paul. But you get in there and you talk to some of their staff and everything else, and you just sit there with your mouth open as to how ignorant some of them are about constitutional principles. They do not understand them. It is incredible. So it is a matter of educating people, even the congressmen. And sometimes the best way to educate a congressman is through the constituents, because they won't vote for a man that doesn't vote the right way and hold the position of the founders of our country. And that's changing around more and more in the country as we can educate more people. We don't have to tell them how to vote. They just simply evaluate that candidate based on his knowledge or her knowledge of the Constitution and their willingness to live up to it. If they did that, we wouldn't need a constitutional convention, and we would have a balanced budget. Although, and this is a key point, and this is something that your listeners should write down, we need to repeal amendments to the Constitution rather than add amendments to the Constitution in order to have a balanced budget. If we get rid of the 16th and 17th amendments to the Constitution, we will have a balanced budget ultimately. Pure and simple.
Well, how did those amendments get ratified to begin with? I mean, they must have had the approval of the people.
Well, they did. And I'll tell you, it all came about as a result of the elections of 1912. In 1912, the Socialist Party candidate, Eugene V. Debs, got the equivalent today of over 3 million votes. You also had the Progressive Party that got several millions of votes. And you also had Wilson, who got several millions of votes and became president. Those were all primarily socialist in nature. And they did not understand, and there was a lot of agitation, a lot of media, a lot of money went into the idea that we need to have direct election of senators. The people have to vote for the Senate instead of the legislatures voting for the Senate. Let me tell you how it worked. The government's budget was based on tariffs and luxury taxes, that kind of thing, and excise taxes. And if the budget went over what they took in through those means, then they dunned the states for that, to make up the budget fall. That was done on an appropriate, based on the population in those states. In other words, New York, you have this many people. Arkansas, you have that many people. Wyoming, you have that many people. Based on your population percentage-wise, that's what you owe us in money. Okay?
Oh, okay.
Now, that meant that when the House voted for spending, which all spending bills have to start there, the senators didn't want to vote for a budget that would dun their legislature because they would have to go back and answer to the legislature, and the next time around, they'd be voted out. You see?
Right, right.
And so, that was the first step. The second step was the income tax. Now, there's a very interesting, and I don't have a constitution in front of me right now, but there was a very interesting word in that amendment that established the income tax, and that word allowed the federal government to dun the American people for these budgets instead of dunning the state legislatures. Okay? So those two amendments to the Constitution changed the entire process of how national budgets were met. And because nobody talks about this, that they're talking about a constitutional convention. I mean, they're moot. They don't even want to go there. And if they understood that it's just a matter of repealing instead of adding, it would be much more simple to get a balanced budget. There's something else in the works, because too many people are working together for a wide variety of amendments. And you have to ask the question, why? Why don't they talk about these things?
Yeah, why don't they? I mean, and now I'm sorry, were you talking 16 or 17?
Both.
I have my, okay, so 16 is short. Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states.
Without apportionment amongst the several states.
And without regard to any census or enumeration. And that's the end.
That's right. That was how they did it before. They did it through apportionment through the states. That's how they raised the money from the legislatures. See, it's very simple if you understand what it's saying.
Sure.
But most people, because they don't understand how it was done before, do not understand the verbiage. But that's what it's all about.
Interesting.
So it's very interesting. And like I say, you've got to take a look at the whole spectrum of how we got ourselves in this mess. in order to how to know how to undo it. I mean, we don't undo it by adding more to it. We have to go back to what our founders wanted originally. You can't find your way home if you don't know where you started from.
True.
And a lot of people don't look at these things and try and figure out, what does that mean?
Well, it's no different than, you know, a lot of these legislatures, you know, pound their chest because they got new laws on the books. Well, we don't need more laws. We need to follow the laws that are already there because we already have laws that protect us and do what they're supposed to do. We just don't follow them and we don't enforce them.
But people are funny. I had somebody tell me last week, well, Congress isn't doing its job. They've hardly passed any laws. And it's like, you know, actually, you might want to rethink that. That's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, I vote for the guy that says, I'm gonna repeal laws. That's going to be my goal.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I put a thing on the chat room, Art, back when we were talking about the lack of I don't know if it's schooling or knowledge or what, but there's a guy named Mark Dice, and he periodically goes out among the, you know, among the citizenry and does these nutty surveys, and he tapes them, puts them on YouTube. And he had one where he was walking around with a clipboard and asking people to sign to repeal the First Amendment. And people actually signed it.
Well, bro.
They were like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. It's like, what? So obviously they had no idea what the First Amendment really
and
was.
And the scary thing is these are the people that we run out and we register to vote, you know, because we want their vote.
They don't
know what they're voting for.
Okay, so before we bash the public, because God knows we all make mistakes, but wow, you know, should check with your family and friends, make sure they're not some of those folks. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we'll have Art through the top of the hour. And no more interruptions there. So you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding. You're on We the People Radio. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And the phone number is 530-605-4567. Be right back.
I'll keep my freedom. I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion too. Try to keep on working, try to keep on smiling. I will keep my Christian name and y'all can keep the change.
They all started looking real suspicious at him, and he jumped up and said, now just wait a minute, Jim, you know he's lying. I've been living here all of my life. I'm a faithful follower of Brother John Birch, and I belong to the Antioch Baptist Church, and I ain't even got a garage. You can call home and ask my wife. Then he started saying something about the way I was dressed, but I didn't went around to hear the rest. I was too busy moving.
Best
and
song ever.
Run out of luck.
Thanks, Bob. Oh, my gosh. Had to get that in there. Wouldn't be right without it.
You know, one of the things I'd like to recommend is that your listeners go to thenewamerican.com. And at the top, you'll see at the top bar, it says Voting Index. And it's the Freedom Index. And they can look up every member of Congress as to their cumulative voting record vis-a-vis the Constitution of the United States. The best guy you have in California in that regard is Tom McClintock. He has voted a cumulative record of 91%. All the rest of them are below that. And you might ask the question, how long, you know, even when you've got good men and women, they're 80%ers, let's say, how long does that 20% accumulative erode the Constitution?
Yeah,
you know, when they
no
vote,
kidding.
You know, so that's part of the problem. One of the men that used to be in Congress said, I read every bill, and I start with the title, and if it's unconstitutional, I say no. He says, sometimes it's the title. Sometimes it's the first sentence. He says, it's always within the first three paragraphs. So that's the way they can, it doesn't take long to go through these bills that way. If you have a constitutional sense.
Sure. And it all depends on who's scoring.
Well, that's true, too.
It all depends on who's scoring and what their agenda is, because one that just stuck out for me was a 2013 bill by Justin Amash don't remember the number, but it was going to limit the NSA's ability to spy on people without a warrant. It was a pretty, it was a pretty short bill too, and it was basically going to curtail them. They couldn't spy on people without warrants. Seemed like a good idea. Heritage judged that bill as zero conservative.
Really?
Yeah, you got a zero for that one if you voted for it. Like, okay, that's confusing.
Well, there
So there is some of that kind of nonsense going on.
There is, and regrettably, most of the conservative organizations inside the Beltway tend to be neocon, and rather than constitutional. We had a very conservative movement, a constitutionalist movement, you know, in evolving out of the 30s into the 60s, but then it got co-opted by the neocons after the 64 election. I saw things happen in the, see, I was on the Draft Goldwater Committee back in 64 as just a local, you know, young buck working for the Draft Goldwater Committee, not much of a leader, but a heck of an activist. And I'd go all the meetings and everything else, and I started to notice strange things. For instance, men that I never heard of before who were suddenly the leaders in the Goldwater movement, who after the election exposed themselves as being very, very liberal. But they came into the movement, got a surfboard, and got on the wave. And so then they rode that wave into leadership in the party under false pretenses. And it was very difficult to get people to understand this after a while because they didn't have the experience over a number of years. I used to go to all the Republican conventions and work on platform committees for the state and all the rest of it. And I learned there were some people that had a tremendous conservative reputation, but in reality, they were anything but. They were not for the Constitution. They were not pro-life. They were not for the Second Amendment. They always, for instance, let me give you an example of how this worked. I said, one guy, I was on a speaking tour talking about taxation. And this fellow that was putting it on in this area of Iowa had to go home and get something before we went down to the venue. And we rolled into his yard, and he had this sign for president. And I won't even mention who it is. I said, I thought you were Catholic. Because he says, I am. I says, well, then you're strong pro-life as a result of that. He says, yes, I am. I says, well, why are you supporting that man for president? He said, well, he's pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
I says, where do you hear that? He says, well, it's in his literature. I says, give me a piece of his literature where it says that. And he gave me the man's campaign literature, and it said, family values.
Oh.
I said, sir, family values is what you think they are when you read this, not what he really believes in. And that's the kind of thing that they use, these somatical weapons against us, to where they get us to think they stand for one thing, when in fact they don't at all. Anyway, it's a problem, has been a problem in the Republican Party forever. And,
well, that sort of thing is easy to identify once they're in office just by their voting record, but how do you protect yourself from somebody who, like you say, is gonna jump on the wave and get elected for the first time? I mean, you still have to take a chance if that person is telling you the truth going into going into office.
So it really boils down to having a network in your area to find out what this person is really like through your friends that you trust. I'm sure that you go to Tea Party meetings, for instance, other things such as that, and the word kind of gets around as to what this person really stands for after a while.
Sure.
And that's how you do it, basically. It's the only way you can do it, really. Right. And it isn't 100% perfect, but it's a way.
No, and it's funny, too, because sometimes, people get so, we get get lied to all the time, you know, Brian Williams notwithstanding. and boy, haven't we had some fun at his expense. But, you know, you assume that everybody's lying. And the bad part is then, even when you're told the truth, it's easy to rope people in because they figure they're being lied to. And that's another, you know, form of it, like this constitutional convention. They figure, well, you know, a lot of these people are probably lying to me, so I'm going to believe guys like Mark Levin, and, you know, he wouldn't lie to me.
Well, that's true. The thing is that sometimes when you tell the truth, and you tell it unvarnished, people can't accept it. See, in the John Birch Society, we believe in a conspiracy. We say there are those who mean to rule us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think up ideas, people organize ideas, people finance ideas, people make things happen. And as FDR was purported to have said, nothing happens in politics that wasn't planned that way. And yet when you show people who the planners are, sometimes they aren't ready to accept it because you're stepping on the toes of their heroes. We get our heroes through the media, primarily. That's how we're fed our heroes, whether we realize it or not. And as a result, people don't like that. And once people make up their mind about something, it's 10 times harder to get them to change their minds. And the conservatives have heroes just as much as liberals have heroes. And sometimes these people have been put in those positions in order to fool us. I know, for instance, let me just give you one crazy off-the-wall thing. Many years ago, I used to infiltrate Marxist organizations, and I did so in tandem with the Seattle Police Intelligence Squad. In other words, we worked together. I was not part of the squad. We just worked together and, you know, ferreting out information. In those days, in the early 60s, late 60s, you know, we used to have bombings all the time. People today have no idea what terrorism was in the United States in those years. It was quite prominent. At any rate, that aside, the leading terrorist in the city of Seattle, and J. Edgar Hoover called him the most dangerous terrorist in the United States, was a member of the Students for a Democratic Society. He was the leader of it. And a few years ago, we got a phone call at the John Birch Society from an individual who was a religious man. And he said, you know, we agree on certain things, and we disagree on certain things, but I would like to write for your magazine on those things we agree with. And so the IT guys and the magazine came to me and asked, do you know this fellow? And I said, no, I never heard of him, Reverend so-and-so, but I have heard of so-and-so. So we went on online, and sure as shooting, it was the same guy.
Wow.
Now posing as a man of the cloth. And with the same political background, except now he'd put on a disguise. And I started to do some research, and it was amazing how many terrorists of the 1960s and 70s had become ministers, rabbis, and imams in the Muslim faith. You remember Stokely Carmichael, Burn, Baby Burn? He became an imam, and a lot of others like that. In other words, whatever it took to be able to assimilate into the general society and start to promote their philosophy from a position of respect rather than a position of burn, baby, burn. And so this happens a lot within the conservative movement, and people don't realize how much this happens. And how some of these leaders are actually have been on the other side all along. They changed their rhetoric and are now Mr. Conservative instead of Mr. Terrorist or Mr. Liberal or Mr. Socialist or whatever it is. You have to be very careful about such individuals. You never are sure whether they changed or whether it's a facade.
Well, I think if they truly changed, they wouldn't hide their past. They'd admit their past and admit their their new enlightenment and let it go from there and see if people believe them or not.
And there are men who like that, who've done that.
And that's fine. But you can't reinvent yourself and try to keep your past a secret.
Not in today's world.
No.
Well, how much of that is going on with this convention? Because I see things, you know, I was just kind of clicking around on some of these sites and, oh, the John Birch Society is misleading and lying to you. You know, they're putting out bad information, saying it's a scam. And, you know, how much of that is actually taken hold?
I don't know for sure. I know that it has some effect, but let me tell you that I kind of have to chuckle when I see that they have constitutional scholars and we have fear mongers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's sold. That this is all fear mongering. It has no basis in fact. Don't pay any attention to them. Don't look behind the curtain.
Yeah, it's very Oz, isn't it? Yeah, don't look at the man behind the curtain.
So that's a lot of that's going on, and they've been able to get some rhinos involved. What's his name? Lasik? What's the governor of Ohio? I can never pronounce his name.
Kasich. John Kasich.
Kasich. Yeah, they got a charter airplane for him, and they took him around to North and South Dakota and Montana and Idaho and Utah to meet with legislators to promote this thing. And if you look at his background, he's got a conservative image, but if you look at the issues that he's been involved in, it is anything but conservative. For instance, he was one of those that supported the assault gun ban, for instance. So there we're back to the Second Amendment again. And you see that sort of thing always cropping into some of these individuals. They spent a lot of money putting him around, and they got him in front of an awful lot of legislators, and I'm sure he convinced many of them that they need to vote for a constitutional convention, because we've got to do something.
Yeah, anything.
Anything.
You know, that's where I think people really get hooked on these things, is like anything's better than what we have now, and that is so dangerous.
Yeah, and anything isn't.
No.
We're in a mess. There's only one way out of the mess. It involves work. A lot of people don't like that. It's the worst four-letter word in the English language. but it basically is, you've got to get involved in an outreach program educating the opinion molders in your community. That is not an overwhelming problem. Only 5% of the people, 5% run your local community. They're the individuals who are Boy Scout leaders, they're Kiwanian members, they're in the Chamber of Commerce, they're on your city council, etc. If you can get to those individuals, you will change your community. If you can educate them as to the problems and their solutions, things will change. And these things are going on around the country in pockets here and there where we're able to do that. But it takes outreach. It also means informing your family and friends and peers at work and that sort of thing. But primarily the focus has to be on the opinion molders. Once you do that, things start to change. That's what happened during the War of Independence. Everybody agrees that the population was divided into three parts. One third wanted independence, one third wanted to be Tories, and one third could care less. But the historians say that 3%, only 3% got involved in the war. Well, that 3% was the majority of that 5%. In other words, 60% of that 5%. And that's what won the war. The average citizen wasn't ever involved. It was just those people that ran the local communities.
Well, it's the same in California. I mean, when you look at your California elections, I think it was like 17 or 20% of the people are the ones pushing through and you know, implementing all this garbage we have here.
I've actually seen local elections where 4% have made the difference.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, they've actually been the majority.
Yep.
Unbelievable. So, just say no to the Constitutional Convention, and if you want more information,
JBS.org.
Yep.
Go to JBS.org.
Got tons of it on there. Art, we appreciate you coming on with us and smartening us up.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank
Believe
you.
Me.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your 8 degrees. We're going to go prance outside with no coats on.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Art.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so a lot. Long. Next week, we're going to come back with William Kay and Environmentalism is Fascism. You're going to love it. Get on there and find out what we're doing with Technocracy Rising as well. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
On KCNR Shasta.